Hello and welcome to part two of our ripoffs and remakes show for the Midnight Triple Feature podcast. As always, you can find us on the web at midnighttriplefeature.blogspot.com, on Twitter and Facebook at MT Feature, also on Instagram. You can subscribe to our channels through iTunes, Stitcher Smart Radio, and YouTube, and send feedback and requests to midnighttriplefeature@gmail.com. We will always answer your emails and messages. For this episode, we are discussing The Blob from 1988, The House on Haunted Hill from 1998, and Rob Zombie's Halloween, a movie that requires no introduction, from 2007. This podcast will contain spoilers. Enjoy.
All right, everybody, welcome to part two of this spectacular ripoff and remakes episode. We're actually getting into the three that Adam picked. I picked part one. Adam's got part two.
We did the ripoffs first. Now we're doing the remakes.
So we're back. So go listen to part one. Well, you wouldn't listen to part two. I guess you could listen to part two.
You don't have part to listen one. To part one, but I would recommend you do.
Yeah.
You get to hear some Bollywood music, which how could you not want to listen to that?
It's fantastic. So we're back here with part two.
Right.
You guys know the website, midnighttriplefeature.blogspot.com. Find us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Instagram. I don't think we're anywhere else.
Find us in all the wonderful places where podcasts can be found.
Yes. iTunes. If you guys use iTunes and if you like the show, head over there. Leave us a written review or a star rating. It really helps us out. You guys keep doing that. We'll keep doing this.
Yep.
All right. So where do you want to start with yours?
All right. So the good thing about if you were to listen to the last episode, just kind of preface this isn't a typical episode because we literally just finished recording the last one. So we're
it's
still
magic.
On this, right. We're time traveling, right? We're time traveling into the future and we're still technically in the same day. So we're not going to have anything else to talk about besides reviews. So if you want to go back to the other episode, you can hear our top five ripoff remakes. We talk a little bit about Wes Craven. You know, so like if you want more of a typical type of show, go back and listen to that. And then this is sort of a continuation of that. So we're sorry if you're normally used to hearing, you know, news and sort of discussion about current goings on. I'm not going to have that. We're going right into reviews. But we do believe that we're still going to have a full show just based on the movies we have to discuss.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to start out with 1988's The Blob, the remake of the 50s classic. So let's start with the trailer.
If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a face, you could look it in the eye. If it had a body, you could shoot it. Now, man is no longer the supreme being on this planet.
The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
Nobody believes me about what happened tonight.
What did happen?
I want that organism alive. I think you pissed it off.
All right, and that was a trailer for 1988's The Blob. So 1988, hot off the heels of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors, Chuck Russell, who directed Dream Warriors, gets right in on The Blob. So it's only a year later. So 87, Dream Warriors comes out. It's a huge, massive hit. It just does better than anybody could have ever imagined. So it's no surprise that, you know, Chuck Russell and Frank Darabont, might I say, because Frank Darabont was a writer on Nightmare 3, Frank Darabont also helped pen the screenplay for this. So Frank Darabont would go on, obviously, to direct The Shawshank Redemption and The Mist and Green Mile and Walking Dead and all these other things. So, like, it's interesting if you go back to this period in time and look at the people behind the scenes on these movies. So this, again, this came a year after Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Had a budget of, I think, let me look at it here. I believe it was $18 million. So it had a budget of $19 million estimated. It only grossed about $8 million.
Yeah.
So what happened is it only made back about half of its budget, which is not a good thing, right? So you made a Hollywood movie. You're hot. Again, you come right out of a huge success with Nightmare 3. And Chuck Russell doesn't work again in a director's chair until like 1994 when he does The Mask with Jim Carrey. That, of course, was actually a big hit. But I'm going to say right off the bat, now, despite what you and I will disagree with on this movie, it's an odd thing to me that Chuck Russell, because I love this movie, I'm going to say right up front. It's an odd thing to me that Chuck Russell, who directed the best Nightmare on Elm Street movie, in my opinion, which is Part 3, and then The Blob, which is one of the best remakes, in my opinion, of all time, it just sort of dissolves into... I mean, he's still around, and he did some stuff that you know, and he did movies like The Mask, but that he never went on to become a modern sort of horror guy is surprising to me, because I think he was well on his way, and I think if this movie had been a hit, I think if this movie had made money, Chuck Russell would be a completely different guy today. I think he's a name that we would actually talk about, and we don't. Like, if you ask people who directed Nightmare on Elm Street 3, I don't know if there's that many people who would even know that Chuck Russell was behind that movie. And he did something really amazing with that movie. He brought a franchise to a whole new level. And that's, I'm going to say that's what I think he did with The Blob. So they take this movie from the 50s, The Blob. You know, it's a great classic sci-fi horror movie. It's a lot of fun. It's a little cheesy. Great effects for the time, this and that. And they bring it into the 80s. And I feel like, the things they did right, first of all, is they brought it right into 80s, meaning they went full on 80s effects at this time. So you already had movies that had come out like Reanimator and Return of the Living Dead, you know, all these kind of like high gore, almost, and comedies, you know, Return of the Living Dead Part 2 may have been out already, Evil Dead 2. So this movie is kind of in reaction to that. So it kind of fits itself right into that mold and says, well, we're going to make a modern B movie. You know what I mean? We're going to take the B movie formula. We're going to bring it into the 80s and we're going to make it high quality effects. We're going to just kind of go that route with it, but we're going to maintain a lot of that cheesiness that we had with the 50s. So right off, I think for me, that's like the main thing that works, because they kept a lot of the things that I felt were like the silliness of it, I think, but then they made it more horrifying at the same time. So they brought it into the modern world, but just kept a lot of the things that I felt worked. But I'm curious, like, for you, because I know you're not as sold on this movie. What is it for you that just doesn't, you know, gel? It doesn't work.
No, I love the original.
Yeah.
You said you love this movie.
Yeah, more than the original.
I
for sure.
love mm-hmm. the original. Mm-hmm. For this one, take two of your loves off, right? I don't hate it,
yeah,
but it's just not for me. I just felt like it was a cheesy version of the original meets Night of the Comet.
Right.
And it just didn't work for me. I didn't care for the characters. I didn't care for all the shit that was going on in it. I completely hated the fucking Blob. Like, I just hated that fucking...
What?
I hated that
Why?
Monster. I don't know.
Why?
There was just something about
like
it
the
I
scene,
hated.
So, all right, so, like, just a few key examples. The scene when the guy is in the fucking doctor's office and it's on the ceiling and it comes down and then, like, you see him dissolving and it's... Like, that's fucking amazing.
Okay, so...
The scene where the Blob, like, comes out of the girl's body and fills the car. Like, there's... Now, some of the scenes later, because we're watching, you have to understand too, we're watching a movie that was made in 1988, watching in high def. So the effects when it's coming through the town are in a strong, but I like a lot of the things they did with it. I mean, I don't know, I liked that it had tentacles. I liked.
I hated that. I hated that so much. The Blob itself, I hated. Now, the scene where he is in the hospital, yeah. Like the cover.
That's the cover, yeah, with the face coming through.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And like his hand comes off.
Yeah.
Now, here's my thing. Going through this whole movie, after I watched it, the effects in this, not the effects of the Blob, but all the other effects of the dead bodies, mm-hmm. the body that's cut in half in the hospital.
Right.
All that is fucking fantastic. And
okay, keep going.
So I started doing some research because I'm like, this, the guy who did this, whoever did that, really needs to be talked about because that's the best part of the movie, is those effects. And his name is Nick Benson. You know this guy?
No.
Because if you don't know his name, you're definitely going to know a lot of his work.
Of course. The effects work in this movie is fucking amazing.
His very first movie was this movie.
Yeah.
Then he went on to Night of the Demons.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know exactly who this guy is.
Then he went on to The Howling, which wasn't that great.
I've seen interviews with this
guy. He did Dead Heat. He did Nightmare on Elm Street 4. He did Society.
Mm-hmm.
He did Bride of Reanne, which wasn't a great movie,
right.
But the effects were fucking awesome. He did Tremors, man. Yeah. This guy, he did, well, and then he goes on to Dancing with Wolves, but this guy's work is amazing.
Yep.
And it just baffles me because I'm watching this Blob that I don't really care for mixed with these other effects that are so good.
I love the Blob effects in this, though. I really do. I feel like, whereas in the first one, it looked, like, I love the effects in the first one. I think they're really innovative, and I think they're, like, amazingly ahead of their time in a way that, like, it's almost impossible to even understand how they pulled it off the way they did. But, like, the way that they do this one is it feels, it first of all, it doesn't feel like a thing of, like, red Jell-O. It feels alive to me. It's got, like, I don't know. It's got almost like a,
like a frog in it, since how it just fucking picks people up like they're flies.
Yeah, but I like that. I like that it has an actual, like, physical form, that it can do things, that it can actually interact, that it's alive in a way that, you know, I don't know, that it's more active in a way.
I love
like that.
The original, when the Blob completely fills up the restaurant.
Right.
And, you know, obviously it's a miniature, but it was done real well. And then in this, things...
Yeah, but, like, the scene where it shoots up out of the sink into the ceiling. I mean, that, it's like... I love that.
You
know what? I just love the way that you see it. Every time you see it, it's bigger. So, like, it's every time you see it, it's just, like, constantly growing and evolving. And the point where, like, you can see, like, remnants of people inside of it. Like, there's points where, like...
No, that I did like.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can see that it's, like, been just devouring.
When she's in the telephone booth.
I love that
and
scene.
And that dude's
yeah, and
dead
you see
face,
his face
is on.
Come floating
That's
past.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That I like. There's a lot of stuff about this I like. There's a lot. Even more, I just don't like.
Right. So outside of the effects.
And how many blobs are there, by the way?
What do you mean?
Is there just one blob? Because when the Blob is downtown terrorizing people, this dude's making out with this chick in the car, and then the Blob comes out of her. So how many?
No, that was before, because it leaves the hospital, so it eats the kid in the hospital. Then it eats the kid in the car, and then it makes its way downtown into the stores and shit. So, and right. Into the movie theater. Well, it's a movie theater. And the movie theater scene is great, too. I mean, like, the way that scene is even shot, so, like, it cut... So you start on the movie, and it's kind of disorienting, because all of a sudden you cut, and it's two people making out, and it looks like another scene in the movie. I just love the way that they did this. And for a second, you can almost get thrown off and think you're still watching The Blob, but you're actually watching the movie within the movie that they're watching in the theater. And then the dude with the hockey mask comes, and he's got the chainsaw, and there's that asshole behind him in the chair. And he's like, watch what's going to happen now. And he's like laughing and like spoiling the movie. And then the fucking Blob pulls him up to the ceiling and eats him. Love that. Because you ever been in a theater with an asshole and the theater won't fucking shut up and you just wish that a Blob would show up and eat that dude? And then like in the theater, the scene where she like rolls that one woman over or the guy, whatever, and his face is like half dissolved.
Yeah.
And another thing I liked about it is the explanation. It actually made sense. Like the cold made sense. Like, as to why this thing, I don't remember in the first movie if they ever really give you any kind of idea, but the whole idea with this, and they really do allude to it a lot, is it's just really fucking hot. So, like, if you touch it, it melts you in a way, you know, like, you can see it, like, the way it sizzles.
Yeah, because it's got some sort of acid in it.
Yeah, but they really kind of drive that home. The fact that it was so hot from being in space and all this.
It moves on its own.
Yeah.
And it
it's a biological weapon.
It sucks people in and dissolves them in acid.
Yeah.
But yet, when it's on concrete, tile, rug, whatever else it rolls across, doesn't destroy any of that.
You can't think about it. You're going to go there?
I'm going there, man.
What? You could say the same thing about the first movie.
Yeah, but they don't explain it like that.
But that's part of the great, one of the great things about it is that's one of the great things about, like, a 50s sci-fi B movie that's, you know, they've obviously pushed it up into 88.
And then you got this douchebag motorcycle guy that I could care less about, right?
Yeah.
He should have been in the Breakfast Club or something.
No.
This hot chick walks up to him
yeah.
and says, oh, we need to talk. And he's like, you didn't want to talk to me when I was in school. Motherfucker, go smash that shit. Like, she's talking to you now.
I agree with you there. But to be fair, the dude was just handcuffed and being treated like an asshole by a bunch of cops. You don't exactly have a hard-on at that point. But I like...
Why did he get free food?
I like... Well, but she felt bad for him, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she felt bad for him. But I like that they kind of play with this whole idea because you set it up with the football player. And, of course, you're in the 80s, right? And you're an 80s horror movie. Your hero is going to be the girl, the high school girl, the virgin. They set that up.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her hero is going to be... the guy. I mean, he's going to be the guy that's, he's probably going to die, maybe, but if you're in a slasher movie, he's her love interest, so he's going to stick around. The guy that's the quote unquote bad guy, the bad boy, punk, whatever, is not your typical hero. So they kill off the guy that's supposed to be there to protect the virgin, like within the first 20, 30 minutes of this movie, they kill him off. And it's funny because he actually ends up being a complete asshole. Because he's, for whatever reason, just treating, you know, Flag like he's a complete douche. For no reason, just because, you know, I don't know why. But I kind of like how they play with those stereotypes a little bit. Now, they still follow those stereotypes to a fucking T. You know, like, but they make the hero semi-unconventional, although the virgin is still the hero in the end. So, I don't know, man. Like, this movie, I remember seeing it. And just...
And then she go... So her brother... Were they both her brothers? Or was one a friend?
Brother and a friend. So her brother was the one...
In the yellow jacket. The one that didn't get eaten.
And that's another thing. This movie kills a kid.
Not only kills a kid, shows you the dissolving, dying
Yeah, shows you
kid.
As he's fucking dissolving in the
Which
water.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, no fucking movie ever does that. It's gotta get some props.
They're running through the
and
sewer.
And that kid was an asshole. He deserved it.
And she's trying to sit... And I'm like, what the fuck are we watching? The Adventures of Babysitting? Like this what? Is insane.
That's her brother.
Yeah. So get the brother out. Fuck the other kid. Get the hell out of there.
Well, yeah, but.
But, and then she's at the top of the, at the top of the whatever the hell, not, I guess you call it.
She's trying to get out of like a grate thing.
Yeah. And the blob's mouth is opening.
Yeah.
Blob has a mouth?
Well, it's not really a mouth. It just, it can, they've already established that this thing can create forms and do various things. So it's just kind of like, opening up into a giant funnel to swallow her.
I was hoping she fell.
I go. Well, she does. She just doesn't fall into the blob.
Yeah, well, I was hoping she fell in the blob's mouth.
But there's a, like, there's other things, though, like in that scene before all that. Like, when they do this really smart thing where they're walking through the water and there's a rat on a board. And someone, one of them makes a comment like, something about the rat. And the kid's like, what rat? There's no rat. And it's like this thing where all of a sudden you're like, oh, like, obviously, it's in the water. But, like, you knew it's in the water, but they use this visual cue of, like, the rat disappears. Without having to show you the blob, they tell you ahead of time that it's there. And then it appears. But, like, they do, like, something like that where it's just this moment of there's a rat and then there's not a rat. And that's this way. Like, for me, it's kind of this smart little way of telling you that it's there before you know it's there. Rather than just having the jump scare, they give you... this little visual thing, you know, be like, well, we're not just...
that I like.
You know, like, you know? There's stuff
they're,
like that.
Like, when they're filming, and they're filming everything around what's going on.
Yeah.
So you, like, you know what's going on, but they don't show you.
Right.
I love that effect. And it's, I mean, it's not even an effect, it's just the way you're shooting it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just smart filming.
Yeah, that I do like. But there's just so many things. And then, I think you said in the beginning, we are going to spoil a shit, so...
I guarantee you that most of the people listening to this have seen this movie.
Yeah. So. I mean, I went on IMDb, all these other sites. People love this movie, so I am in, like, this...
You are in the minority.
I know you are.
That's why I don't feel bad being like, no, like, because I know
I
for
am
a
in
fact,
this little... And it's not that I don't like it.
Right.
There's... I just... There's something about it that just throws me out of it while I'm watching it. At the end, with this, with the snow truck that makes a fake snow.
Yeah.
Everybody in the movie's running around in shorts and like.
Well, they established that it's hot.
So why was the truck full of snow?
That was the joke. So the whole joke behind the thing is that, and I take this as, this is a way that of these guys who are making this movie knowing that their audience already knows about the Blob. So you go into this movie already knowing most likely that the Blob is killed by cold. So rather than try to play with it as some sort of surprise, right from the beginning, they give it away. So they're like, everybody's like, oh, it's so hot. We haven't had snow in years. They're like, oh, we have to have the snow. They were snowmakers because they're a big ski town that hasn't had a good snowfall in 3 years. So it's unusually warm. So they set you up because as an audience, you already know. So right up front, they're like, we know that you know that this, the cold is going to kill this thing. So we're going to constantly tell you that it's warm because we're basically going to just make the twist obvious. That's intentional. And they set it up early, how they all talk about how warm it is, how it hasn't pissed snow in years, how, and then one guy's like, oh, we're going to have snow any day now, whatever. And then the whole idea is that this is a ski town where the Blob normally would have no chance, yet it happens to show up in a time where they're in a drought of snow and in a heat wave. Like, it's all a joke. The whole thing is a joke. Like, basically saying, like, yeah, that first movie, you guys know that movie. You guys know exactly what's going to happen. So we're just going to be like, yeah, we know you know. So here you go. We're just going to make fun of that. We're going to make a joke. And we're going to make it obvious that the cold kills this thing. Right? You watch this movie, there's no way you don't know. They do the thing in the freezer with the ice cubes. They do so many things where they tell you that the ice is going to kill this thing.
Yeah, no,
normally
that
that's the twist. Yeah. Right?
But I'm just wondering why they have a truck full of snow when it's a heat wave.
To make snow for the mountains for the skiers. Because, like, you know how, like,
but it's just going to melt anyway.
You know how a ski sundown?
Yeah.
When there's no snow?
They make snow. They do that in the wintertime.
Yeah, I know. Well, the whole idea is that it was winter there, but they didn't have
a winter.
In the
summertime, they got Beer Fest.
I know, but the whole idea is that it was
snow.
That's the thing, is it was winter there. Like, they were coming into winter, but you wouldn't know it because they didn't get snow anymore. And that's why the town was dying. Because the only thing they had was football. Like, they made that whole thing. Like, the only thing this town has anymore is football. I'm telling you, man, it's a completely self-aware, thing. That's what they're doing. And they don't want to act like you're an idiot, like you don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, there are plenty of things in here I really like, and
I'm just going to check something real quick and then we'll move on. No, I want that one. I'm just curious to see if I can find.
Because I do got to say, this is one of the better remakes I've seen.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless of what you think, you can't deny that it's, you know, that it's not at least a decent film. You know, regardless of how you feel about it, that in terms of a remake, they at least put a lot of effort. They at least put a lot into it. You know, they tried to make something that you would enjoy, regardless of whether or not you did. You know, they put a lot of time into the effects. They really did. They really wanted to make
they're fantastic.
Something that...
There's like 96 people on the effects list, on the special effects list for
right,
this movie.
Exactly. So, let's see. Trying to find like an old review on Rotten Tomatoes, but I don't know if there's gonna be one. I'm just curious to what critics would have said back in the day. But
I got my IMDb. I'll see if it's on there.
2004. This should go by year, so let's see. No, 2004.
Let's see critics reviews. Most of the critics reviews on here are from websites. It looks like.
Yeah, they are, and it looks like this.
Let's see.
So.
Yeah, no, most of them look like they're just websites they don't really have. And a lot of them's not even in English. Dutch, Spanish, Portuguese, German. And there's a ton of them. But it's weird. It's not weird, but IMDb, it's got a 6.4 out of 10.
It's got a 61% Rotten Tomatoes.
So it's not certified fresh.
Oh, it is. It has to be... No. It's fresh. It has to be... It's just barely fresh. It's got the tomato. It doesn't have the splat, so it's fresh. It must be under 60% is rotten, because it comes up as fresh.
I thought it was 72% or higher was fresh.
I don't know. It's coming up as, at least it came up as fresh. Basically, like, the reviews on here, surprisingly worthy remake, fun, cheesy remake from writer Frank Darabont gets the tone right. While not nearly on par with the original, remakes a fast-paced, happily gore-soaked little treat. A horror movie that manages to be scary, funny, suspenseful, and even a parody of other horror movies, which is kind of what I was seeing in there in a way. It's really self-aware of what horror movies were at the time. Someone said modest disposable remake of a less than classic original. No, the original is a classic. I'm not gonna let that guy say that. No way. Original is a classic. So I don't know. One of my favorite remakes of all time. I find it sort of endlessly rewatchable. I watch it. I've seen this movie 40, 50 times. And I mean,
where's the blob go?
What do you mean?
At the end of the movie.
They said they were going to go put it in a warehouse. They say that.
And then they just put up a tent and go to church?
Yeah. Well, no, that guy, nobody knew he had that, though. Nobody knew he had the little jar with the blob in it. Remember, he took the ice cubes and put... That was setting up for a sequel, and obviously the movie made $8 million.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen the sequel, like, what that dude would have done. Like, was he gonna... He was gonna start a fucking apocalypse. That was his plan. He was gonna bring about end times. He was gonna use his own little blob, and he was gonna fucking set about end times with it. That would have been awesome.
The blob would have ate him first.
I know, but it would have been...
Because the blob doesn't... It's not like, I'm your master.
Oh, I know that, but yeah. This dude was nuts.
He's gonna... The blob's gonna come out of the box with a frog tongue.
But, I mean, in the original, they dumped the fucking thing in Antarctica.
That's smart. Movie.
Yeah, I know.
Where there's ice all the time.
Yeah. I think they say in this movie, like, they don't... I don't even know if they say Antarctica, but they say, like, get it to a warehouse until we can move it somewhere, you know. I think they do make a comment at the end. Pretty sure. Anyway, I recommend the shit out of this movie.
No, I recommend it. I'm just saying, it's not something I'd want to watch all the time. Oh, it's... Man.
Been watching this thing since I was like 8 years old.
So definitely check it out. I mean, it is a really good remake. It's got really, phenomenal, phenomenal practical effects.
To be fair to you, when I was like 8 or 9 years old.
You're comparing me to an 8 year old?
Well, no, what I'm saying is that to be fair to you, I am. When I was 8 or 9 years old, I had a friend who was 8 or 9 years old. So yes, I'm comparing you to my 8 year old friend. We used to rent a lot of horror movies, but his parents were really strict. So he could watch horror movies as long as they didn't have nudity or bad language. The Blob has no nudity and no language. I mean, this is pure violence. There's nothing in this movie that's R-rated except for the violence. So I was like, we can watch The Blob. I'm like, there's no nudity in it and there's no bad language. I'm like, it's a lot of really excessive gore, but your parents don't care about that. So we rented that and we rented The Gate. The Gate's a great movie. It's from a PG-13 movie from the late 80s. So I was like, let's watch those. These are two great movies. We watched The Gate and he loved The Gate. We watched The Blob. He was less than impressed with The Blob. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't wrap my head around it then. I was 8 years old. I remember being like, I remember sitting with him in his, fucking living room as we're watching it and being like, isn't this awesome? And him being like, I don't know, I really like The Gate. I mean, like, the next morning, I slept over his house. The next morning, we get up and we had to watch the fucking Gate again. I love The Gate. But I was like, dude, how can you not see how awesome The Blob is? And he's like, he just didn't like it. He just didn't get it. He didn't understand why I loved it as much and why, you know, I didn't get it. No, I mean, but like, he wasn't as impressed with it as me.
Yeah.
It's like I'm having that moment again, but now I'm 32. And you're 8 again. And I'm trying to...
You're just bullying this little kid into watching The Blob.
So... All right, let's move on to House on Haunted Hill.
You do that?
Yeah.
All right, let's run the trailer.
This Halloween, six strangers have been invited to a party. If they can stay up till dawn, they'll win $1 million each. The only catch is that they'll have to live through the night.
Let the games begin.
What's in there? Hey. I think I got something.
Open the door!
Are you doing this?
No.
That was the trailer for. Oh, you gotta get that little thing at the end.
Yeah. That was trying to get a jump scare in a trailer.
So that was a trailer for 1999. I think it's the 98 before. It is 99. 1999's House on Haunted Hill, remake of the William Castle classic. I call it classic.
Playing fucking seagulls.
I call the original classic. I'm not. I really do enjoy that first movie. And conceptually, I think it's a really smart idea, and I think it can be a lot of fun. I don't know that it holds up quite as well as some of his other movies that I enjoy a bit more, but I think House on Haunted Hill, a great title, great idea. And at some point in the 90s, a bunch of people got together. And I mean, like, big names, like Robert Zemeckis is attached to this and some other well-known names. They got together and decided that they were going to start remaking William Castle movies under this production company, Dark Castle Films. And the first one they were going to do was House on Haunted Hill, and then they would eventually do 13 Ghosts, and it just kind of stopped because, well, they just didn't do as well, I think, as they wanted them to do. And this, of course, would have happened right... We talked about Scream in part one of this episode about Wes Craven. This obviously would have happened in that new horror boom that happened in the mid to late 90s, and this was still kind of coming off of that. And we had remakes of The Haunting, which I was going to do The Haunting for this episode, but I can't watch. That movie's too bad. Like, that movie is so bad that I can't even watch it.
With Owen Wilson?
Yeah, I can't. I can't do it. Like, I wanted to because that movie needs to be just torn apart because it's so bad. I wasn't going to put myself through it. I just, you know, so I decided to do this one because at least I think this one has a lot of elements that are entertaining. I think it's watchable, like, as just kind of a horror movie remake. Like, so the things, I'll talk about the things that work. All right. There are things that work in this movie. I think the opening scene is really good. Like, when they set up the history of the house, like, they show this old asylum. And they show all the inmates getting loose. It's very much of like Nightmare on Elm Street or like 70s exploitation, like Don't Go in the Basement type stuff. And you get these inmates kind of running loose. You have this crazy psychotic doctor who's running experiments. And you just have all this gratuitous violence and nudity right in the opening. And they set it up as this, as a modern exploitation film. It really has, I personally feel that's a vibe. You have Jeffrey Combs playing the doctor, and he's obviously just kind of chewing it up, and I think he's really enjoying it, and he seems to really be digging it. And after that, the movie just slowly slides. I feel like it goes from its highest point in the first few minutes, and then over throughout the movie gets worse with a few highlights throughout. I'm being kind to this movie because I do really think it has good elements to it, and I think that opening scene is really good. And I think there's a few other scenes. I think the scene where the woman goes down to the basement and that faceless thing comes up to her, I think is pretty good. When she can see, like, or when they, like, the guy can see the doctor, like, operating and stuff, but then, like, through the camera or whatever it is. And then when he, then you actually look at the scene and there's nobody there. Like, there's really good, some really good visuals early on in the movie. Like, good haunted house visuals. The doctor looks great. The house looks really good. But, and there's a but, the movie unfortunately doesn't ever really capitalize on all of that stuff it sets up. And by the end of the movie, it completely falls apart. Like, completely. By the time the black shit comes out of the wall, it becomes unwatchable at that point. Like, in my opinion, you know.
I think it nailed it with the beginning.
Yeah.
The whole asylum part, doctor and stuff like that. That could be a short film on its own.
Yeah, or a setup for a really good movie.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Other than that, I think this thing is a colossal piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I hate every minute of it. There's nothing in here I like. And the trouble I went through to actually watch, I mean, I've seen
well,
it before.
That didn't help your experience.
But the trouble that I went through to watch it for the show, after that, I was just so fucking pissed off, I didn't even want to watch it.
Right.
I watched it with my old lady, absolutely hated it, didn't watch, she was on her phone half the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just, this whole movie just completely falls apart. I hate every moment of it. I hate the setup. I hate the middle. I hate the ending. I hate the ending.
I hate the ending. Like, the ending completely just, yeah, it's a complete mess.
I watch this. We watched it fairly early. We probably watched it 6-7 o'clock at night. Went upstairs, grabbed my House on Haunted Hill DVD.
And watched it.
And I watched the original after this just because I had to cleanse myself. This movie sucks.
The original is a lot more fun, for sure. It just has that sort, you know, it has that William Castle late 50s vibe to it.
Now, did
really
you
works.
See? All right, so the budget on this was $37
million. Oh, yeah, it was huge, yeah.
$37 million was the budget worldwide. Okay, worldwide, this movie only made $40 million.
Which is why the Castle remakes failed, which is why 13 Ghosts would come out and then you'd be done. They never continued. These movies didn't make any money. You cannot make a movie, a horror movie, for $37 million and expect to make your money back. That's a big bet you're taking. Like, even when horror is hot, which it was really fucking hot at this point, like in the mid to late 90s, horror was big because Scream had jump-started the genre and horror was everywhere. But it was already dying out at this point. And by 99, you know, people weren't really necessarily, I don't think, running out anymore to watch horror movies. They released it at a good time. They released it around Halloween. I remember when it came out, I was supposed to go see it. My friends and I snuck into the movie theater because we knew someone who worked there. So they snuck us in to watch it. We went in, sat down. The movie never started. We decided we were going to go get drunk instead and roam around the streets up near my house because it was the night before Halloween. So we did that instead of watch House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
So then I didn't see it until it came out on DVD, and I was like, eh. So I bought it blind, which is why I own the DVD. So you may have been thinking in your head when I said it was a DVD rip, like why I would own the DVD. I own it because I bought it blind. I was just like, fuck it, I want to see it. So I bought it. And I know when I first watched it, I was like, I could see, the thing that's so frustrating is I can see the potential. I can see it. Like, I can see there's a lot of really good ideas in here. There really are. Like, that setup sets up such a good movie, and there's little hints of that again throughout. All the stuff with Jeffrey Combs as the doctor is actually pretty effective. Like, there's some really good visuals. Pretty unsettling stuff. Like I said, like really on borderline sort of exploitation level type stuff. But first of all, you unfortunately you're in 1999 and you populated this movie with people like Taye Diggs and what's her name from Final Destination and Famke Jan, whatever her name is, the wife. The only like actor you have in here is with Jeffrey Rush, right? Plays the Price character, who's for what he's got, I think he actually does a pretty good job.
Now
in
they
movie.
Say that was a complete coincidence that he looked like Vincent Price.
No, that was that. No way.
That's what I read.
No way. No, I'm saying they may say that. There's no way.
They said it was a complete coincidence.
No way.
And the Price part was a throwback to the character, but they said he was not supposed. They just made him look like that. Now, he looks a lot like Vincent Price.
Yeah, no, there's no way that they weren't. Yeah. The filmmakers may say that, but the fucking guy doing the makeup knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
So, regardless of what they say, that's what we end up with.
And it's crazy to see, because the original was, 57?
It was late 50s, yeah.
So, around 57 or so, they were offered $10,000 to stay in the house.
Now it's $1 million.
And now it's $1 million in 1999, so... I guess the price of living went up a little bit.
Literally the price of living went up. you know. And interestingly enough, like, every time I go back to this movie, there's only two characters I really like in this movie. And that's, I'd like Jeffrey Rush. I like the Price character. I really do like him. I think that he's at least trying to do something different. I like Chris Kattan in this movie. I don't know why. Chris Kattan is the fucking caretaker. I don't know why. It's the only time I think I've ever liked Chris Kattan in anything. And I think it's because it's the only time I've seen Chris Kattan do something that he wasn't basically playing a Saturday Night Live character.
True.
You know what I mean? Is that weird? Like, I think
the whole time I see him on screen, I just want him to say something funny.
Yeah, or you want him to jump around like Mr. Peepers and eat an apple. Do you ever, you know what I mean? Or like, or do that like thing with like where he nods his head with Will Ferrell. Like, I always see him as that. So like, for whatever reason, I've always watched this. Whenever I do watch this movie, I like him in it. I think it's only for that reason, because he's, respect the fact that he's actually at some point in his career tried to do something different. He actually did. And it was in a movie that just didn't do that well, that was never going to do anything for him. But he actually tries to play a character. And I can respect that from some perspective. You know?
Yeah. No, he's good in this. Like, he gets drunk.
He is, though. Yeah. I don't know.
Trying to get the fuck out. Like, he wants his money. He wants to get out.
Right.
He doesn't want to stay there.
No, and I like how he's just basically like, we're all going to die. We're all going to die.
Yeah.
That's it. We're dead.
And then when they're running around, they're like, oh, where did so-and-so go? They're dead.
Mm-hmm.
They're not alive anymore.
I actually like that character a lot. So, no, I think that there's just stuff in here that works, but I think it all falls apart. And the ending is so fucking bad. Not to mention the effects. Those, like, CGI effects.
Oh, yeah.
They shouldn't have tried. CGI was not at a point yet where they could pull it off. They could pull it off today with really good effects. It looks bad.
When they're just sitting there, and then the, I've seen this a few times, but who was the ghost that pulled the rope?
That was Chris Kattan's character. It took me till this viewing to realize that. I've seen this movie so many times, and I could never figure out who it was. This time I watched it, and I was like, no shit, it's him. Like, it just clicked in my head, and I was like, yep.
So he was the one to put the envelope under the window?
Yes.
Okay.
Or it was Price. Could have been Price, too. Because Price promised him if he could live, they'd get the money. But it was definitely Chris Kattan's character.
How did they get down?
Huh?
How did they get down?
I always wondered that at the end of that movie. Well, they make a comment, how are we going to get down? They do say it. Like,
it's the last thing you hear.
My guess would be they didn't, but go back through the house. Safe in the daytime, isn't it?
Is it just a daytime?
Yeah, it was only at night that they... Remember?
Oh, no, because the window went down, so they couldn't
get
back
in. Yeah, I know.
In.
They would just have to get that open. But, yeah, I mean... I don't know. It's a frustrating movie for me, because I think it could have been really good if they just kind of went with with some of the ideas they had. Stayed all practical. There's some really decent practical effects in it. Featured Combs a lot more. Jeffrey Combs is that doctor.
Yeah.
Is spot on.
I do like the scene where Price is looking at the camera and the doctor comes in and he's in like that glitchy mode.
Yeah, that's the bringing, stuff, that's yeah, the that, stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's action. Pretty good.
It's pretty effective, and it could really be creepy. It could really work.
Yeah.
And they just don't do enough with it. That's what ends up happening. Yeah. They get too caught up in the drama. They get too caught up in this whole thing between Price and his wife and them trying to outsmart each other. They get too caught up in all that stuff that they forget that they actually have some good stuff to work with. And all they have to do is make a movie about that. Is, you know, make a straight up haunted house exploitation horror movie. And they could have had something really memorable. And instead they get something that if it's on TV, you can watch it and not necessarily be disappointed you watched it, but at the same time not run out and be like, you have to tell other people to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
All right. So that was House on Haunted Hill from 1999. You want to get into what is Rob Zombie's Halloween?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see if we can tackle this beast.
All right.
Inside every one of us, there exists a dark side. Most people rise above it. But some are consumed by it.
Michael?
Until there is nothing left.
No!
But pure evil.
Behind these eyes, one finds only darkness. These are the eyes of a psychopath.
This August, Rob Zombie unleashes an extreme vision of terror and reinvents a legend. Halloween.
Starting to see a pattern in modern trailers. The House on Haunted Hill trailer had to have that silence followed by the jump scare.
Yeah.
Halloween trailer, silence followed by a jump scare. So, Rob Zombie's Halloween. Let's give a little bit of my history with it. I picked the movie because my thought was, we've definitely talked about this movie on the show before. I've definitely come down on this movie before. But I wanted to take an opportunity to kind of just face the movie head on, take it apart, do what we have to do with it, and sort of put it to its bed.
And bury it.
Right. And not to say it'll never come up again, but air every single problem I have with this movie, and then you can air whatever problems you may or may not have. I don't know all your thoughts on it. And then, you know, just put it out there, because this is a movie that has so much controversy behind it. It has a very solid and dedicated fan base to it. It's one of those rare horror movies that really divides fans. And it's because they took a movie that many people see as sacred and did something with it that you could... You could see it as if Rob Zombie may have bent it over and then sodomized it violently. So, you know, you can look at it in that way. And but I'm going to go through this movie in a way that's not even necessary. I'm going to try to look at it necessarily as not even what it did wrong in terms of the as a remake of an original, but where I really feel like it falters in its own genre and what it's supposed to be in terms of a slasher movie, in terms of what I feel makes a good horror movie. So when I first saw this movie, I'll kind of start there. It was, you know, I saw it opening night, man, opening weekend, Friday night. I went, me, my now wife, you know, then girlfriend.
So you were part of that 56 million box
office? Oh yeah, friends from work. And it was, and my only reason for going to see it was I was a huge fan of The Devil's Rejects. I did not like House of Thousand Corpses. I have not seen it since that first viewing, so my stance on it is still that I do not like that movie, because until I see it and can change my mind, I don't know if I will. I am not a fan of that first movie, but Devil's Rejects blew me away. I was so blown away by that movie. Now, I should have known that from what Devil's Rejects is, that the guy that made that may not make a slasher movie that fit into my mold of what a slasher movie was. But I went in with an open mind. All right, let's see what he can do with it. And I walked out very sort of like confused because I didn't hate the movie on my first viewing necessarily, but I just didn't quite understand it. You know, I just don't think I really got everything, because it was such a fucking assault on you when you first saw it. It was complete opposite of anything that you had in any other Halloween movie ever up to that point. So it didn't fit into what the franchise was. So then eventually it comes out on DVD. I rent it and I watch it and I realize I like it even less. So then I'm at like a Blockbuster one day and they have a used copy for sale for like $5, and it's the Rob Zombie director's cut.
Which is at Walmart right now for $5.
Right. So yeah. I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to buy it. Just out of pure curiosity, I'm going to watch it again. I watch a director's cut, and I'm like, wow. Like, now I hate it even more. Like, this is what Rob Zombie wanted us to see, and it's even worse than what the studio knew. The studio was like, we can't put this movie in those theaters because this is, you cannot do the things you're doing. Like, this is not, no longer, we're going to take this and do our own cut, and you can do whatever the fuck you want on DVD, which is what he did. And then I've seen it, I've seen the movie probably six times now, because, and every time I watch it, I hate watch it and like it a little bit less. But for some reason, I watch it. And I will watch it again. I will watch this movie again in the future. And I'll hate it a little bit more, and I'll hate watch it. And I don't know why I do it. I have no explanation why I continue to return to this movie when as I'm watching it, I hate it so much. I can't help it. Hmm. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. Yeah. I absolutely hate this.
Right.
But let me propose this to you, because I tried to do this because I knew my feeling going into this.
Yep.
Seen it numerous times. Every time I watch it, hate it a little more. So this time when I sat down and watched it, I watched it with my girlfriend. But when I went, and this is her first viewing, so I went into it going, you know what? I'm going to watch this as, I'm going to try to watch this as if it's not a Halloween movie. Right. This isn't Michael Myers.
Right.
If this movie was just a psychotic kid who grew up to be a killer, do you think it would be different? You think it would be a better movie?
So here's the thing. This is how I want to, it's interesting to say that, because that's kind of how I want to approach discussion. But I approached it still a little bit differently than that. I approached it as a slasher movie. So, because in the end, that's what it is. Because this movie is a slasher movie. Whether or not that's what he made, the last hour of this movie is still a slasher movie. It's still about a group of kids who are the focus of the film, who are killed off one by one, sort of, and people around them are killed off by a guy in a mask. It's still a slasher movie. So, like, I'm still trying to approach it from that perspective. So let's talk about, like, at least for me, is it successful as a slasher movie? Not as a Rob Zombie movie, not as, and I don't think it's successful as a horror movie either. And I have reasons for this as well. And that's because it's not scary, but, and I think a horror movie has to in some way not be shocking, but in some way disturb you in a way that makes you feel something for the people on screen.
Yeah.
I don't think that this movie ever does any, there's one, two characters in this movie you feel bad for. Little Michael Myers.
Yeah, which is weird.
Danny Trejo.
I was mad when they killed Danny Trejo. Every time I watch, right. I get mad.
That's good, though. Like, I get mad, too. And I remember being in the theater, and my now wife, then girlfriend, was like, oh, don't kill him. Don't kill, like, vocally being like, oh, don't kill him. He's, no, don't. That's, no matter how much you react to that, when you watch a slasher movie, if you're really watching a good slasher movie, like if you watch Halloween, you don't dislike Annie and you don't dislike Laurie. You don't, those are characters you're supposed to want to see live. And that is really how slasher movies were originally kind of set up. They weren't set up with characters you hated. They were set up with characters you liked. You weren't supposed to sympathize with the killer ever. So for me, the one successful thing he does in this movie is the one thing that you react most emotionally to is when Danny Trejo dies. Because that's the only time in this movie he gives you a character that you actually give a shit about.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and there's another thing in this that bothers, well, a lot of stuff bothers me, but in the original movie, in the original film, right, when you see Michael Myers next to the tree, down the sidewalk, you get that almost like unsettling feeling, like,
yeah,
of being watched. You're like, oh shit, they don't even know that he's, mm-hmm, there. And this one here, when he's across the street, I'm just like, hey, there's Michael Myers.
And you know,
over there.
You know why? Yeah. Part of the reason for that is because he fucks up in the first half of the movie by giving you so much, by allowing you to be part of Michael's life, by allowing you to know him, by allowing you to see him grow up and feel any sympathy for him. He's no longer as threatening when he's in the background because you know too much about him. He's lost all of that menace and mystery Because he's not just some guy that you don't understand.
No, he's a character you just got to know.
You know everything about this guy. So really, he's the one, like, out of everybody in this movie, you know the most about Michael Myers and the least about the people you're supposed to care about. So, like, right from the get-go, he makes a huge mistake in creating a villain.
By humanizing him. Yeah. I hate that.
Right?
Hate it.
To a point where, like, he gives him his first kill is a kid that is a fucking asshole that deserves to die. He gives you character.
They all deserve to die.
Right. He gives you character after character after character who deserve to die. The kid that bullies him, his stepfather, his sister, not his mother, who he doesn't kill. Right. So he gives you a character that you care, that you're supposed to care about. I don't like Sherry Moon Zombie in this movie, but you're supposed to like her.
He doesn't. Or the fact that she, spoiler alert, dies. And it comes back in a second one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The second one, maybe at some point we'll tackle that one. But then he gives you orderlies who are fucking rapists. He gives you, and in the original cut, you know, they're not. And they cut that out. The rape scene that's in this cut is Rob Zombie's fucking vision for this movie, to have fucking rape in Michael Myers' cell, to give you two more despicable people that you don't like and then kill them off. And then that he gives you, so Dr. Loomis, all right, so let's go back a little bit. Dr. Loomis, by the way, I like in this movie. He is another character that I like Malcolm McDowell in this movie as Loomis. I really do. I think that I like Donald Pleasance as well. I like both takes on the character equally in a way. I think Malcolm McDowell is a really good addition to this movie. He's not nearly enough to save it. Like Donald Pleasance in that first movie is, you know, has a presence in a way that I think really works. I don't think it has quite the same effect in this movie, but I think Malcolm McDowell does a good job of portraying that character. And you get the feeling early on that he does actually want to help this kid. And then eventually is like, he can't be helped. But back to the shitty character.
I don't know. I kind of like Dr. Loomis in the original better.
Oh, I do too. Yeah. I like both, you know, like for different reasons, I think. I like the way that he actually fleshes out this Loomis a little bit more.
The way they do. All right, so Dr. Loomis in this one, he tries so hard to get Michael Myers back on track.
Right.
But Michael Myers doesn't remember anything that happened.
Yeah.
But yet he tells him that he killed people. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Right.
All
right,
he doesn't remember, so let's play on that. Maybe he'll never remember. He can go back into society. Instead, you continuously tell him that he's a fucking murderer.
Right.
I never got that.
True. No, I mean, he's a flawed character for sure. But I think that I don't think he's unlikable in the way that a lot of I think Laurie Strode in this movie is fucking obnoxious.
God, I hate her in this movie.
From the opening scene.
To the stupid bagel thing.
With the bagel thing. He sets her up immediately as an annoying fucking character. Someone who, oh my God. Like, the bagel thing, the way that she's talking about her teacher. He sets up his virginal character as someone who's, you want to see fucking die.
All right, so you start at the beginning. Right, so the point where you meet the family. It's right. Nothing but swearing.
Right.
It's
well, this is right from the opening. Yeah.
Right from the opening. It's just, and that immediately throws me out.
Can we also ask when this movie takes place?
I was going to get there. I couldn't tell. So you immediately just get swear after swear after swear, right. Profanity after profanity, right up to the point of the murders. And then they're still swearing.
Yeah.
Then you get the Laurie character growing up and she's fucking a bagel. The whole first, like, 15 minutes of this is just ridiculous.
And he has, like, completely over-sexualized everyone in this movie. In a really weird way. Like, in the first movie, or in the original movie, you know, Michael's sister has sex, and then Michael kills her. But in this movie, like, the way the stepfather comments on her having a nice ass, and in the way that we see her in bed with the boyfriend, and the way that she's, like, you know, he has to display these women. And that's fine. I'm all for nudity, especially in my, you know, horror movies. But there's a way that like John Carpenter did it. And again, like I know we didn't want to talk about the original, but you can't help
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you have to.
Because he did it so well. Like he did it in a way that was just, this is like the trashy version of that movie. This is Rob Zombie's white trash version.
Yeah, pretty much.
And why? I don't get it. Like, how does he think that putting Michael Myers in a broken home somehow makes, if you want to make, the thing that made him scary in the beginning was that he clearly lived in a suburban house. It seemed pretty standard. Seemed pretty, like, middle, just from what you saw, the way the house was set up, it was clean, it was obviously on, like, a suburban neighborhood, on a, you know, like, a very typical street, sort of anywhere USA, it could be here, it could be my house, right, it could be, like, anywhere. Rob Zombie puts him in a fucking shithole.
Yeah.
And says, you were raised by a stripper mom, you had a stepfather who's an asshole, you had a sister who's a slut, you had kids who beat the shit out of you, you like to murder animals. So, yeah, you were from a broken home, that's why you're the way you are. And if he were to imply that that's not what he was trying to do, then he has no fucking clue what he's doing in a movie. Because that's exactly what he does. He tells the audience it's not Michael's fault he is the way he is. He's a victim of his environment.
Yeah, I hate that so much.
Right.
Another thing that I know we're jumping around here, but...
Yeah.
Another thing that pisses me off every time I watch this. You have the Michael Myers character as a child.
Right.
All of a sudden, he goes from an average-sized child... to this monstrosity of a monster.
Makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
He's Jason Voorhees all of a sudden.
Yeah. Right? So at least give me a child that's maybe a little big for his age or cast somebody who's a little older and say he's a younger so that we believe that he's going to grow to be 7'2".
Or cast an adult Michael Myers who's not a fucking giant. Because guess what is scary? A fucking gigantic guy.
Yeah.
Let's cast, like, another thing that they did... It's like they knew in the first movie, yeah, you can cast the fucking giant in the role of the killer, or you can cast the average, sort of just average-sized guy who, despite that, despite the fact that he looks completely normal physically, can brutally murder you, like, in a way that he shouldn't be able to. That is so much more effective. Like, he shouldn't, like, if he's not threatening, it adds to his menace, you know? Like, say that this guy who looks so normal, who came from this normal place, who has no reason to do what he does it, and does it really well.
I mean, if you want to get real technical, we don't really see who his father is, because that's his stepfather.
His father's dead. The sister says he's in heaven.
Yeah, but we never get to see him. Maybe he's a really big dude. But then how come the sister's not above average? How come Laurie's not above average?
Right.
How come the mother's, you know, normal? Like, you have all these characters that are supposedly his family,
right,
supposedly related. They're all of normal size, and somehow Michael Myers is the only one.
I mean, being a fucking giant.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And let's talk about Laurie. Okay, so let's talk about that. So Laurie is in the beginning of the movie. She's a baby, right? She's a little baby.
Yeah.
When we cut to the future, like, it's 17 years later, she's, like, say, 18 years old, 17 years old. The movie starts in the 70s, right? Isn't it?
All right, so...
The kid's obsessed with Kiss. Like, they're wearing what appears to be, like, 70s styles.
Not only that, when Dr. Loomis is talking to Michael, all that stuff, all the audio equipment is wicked old shit, like, reel-to-reel.
Yeah, so you're in the 70s.
It's gotta be.
But the movie clearly takes place in 2007.
Yeah, like all of a sudden, once Halloween, maybe it was a leap year.
A lot of them.
Lot of leap years. Because all of a sudden, yeah, it's like modern day. Right.
It doesn't make any sense. And Rob Zombie just doesn't fucking care.
No.
Like, and then you talk about, like, so after all that stuff, like, first of all, I mentioned the breakout scene, Rob Zombie's version. I don't understand why. He can't help himself. The man, I was listening to another podcast years ago, and they talked about this movie. They made a really good point, and they point to one scene in particular, but he does it throughout the whole movie. He can't help but show you, because he doesn't actually understand the power of not showing you something. The man doesn't understand it. He just doesn't. So he has to show you all the violence. He has to show you a brutal rape. I'm going to keep going back to that because it's the most out of place thing in this movie to me is that. They brought up the scene where Laurie's parents are killed. He does something really interesting, but he doesn't actually go through with it. He goes through with the Rob Zombie version of it, but he almost hints at almost doing something that's kind of interesting. And I hadn't really thought about it until they mentioned it, but he goes to their house and he kills their parents, right? So he goes in the front door, right through the front door, and the door shuts behind him, right? And the camera's outside the house. And for a second, when you're watching it, you're like, he's not going to show it. Like, he is going to let
us... Oh, I know exactly what you... Yeah.
He is actually going to have Michael go in there. You're never going to know what he did. But you're going to know whatever it was wasn't good. You know when he enters that house, they're dead. Right? There's no question in your mind that they're dead. They're not walking away alive. He can't help it. They outside of the house, you're like, you could cut here. Bang, cut. Next scene, done. You're like, whoa. Like, leave you there. In that moment, like, oh my God. He just killed her parents. Like, what's going on?
And that's effective.
It's incredibly effective.
Yes.
He goes inside the house. You have to see him murder the father. You have to see him fucking brutally murder Dee Wallace. For no reason. Like, if I can get... She's like, leave my baby alone. Leave my... I'm like, oh my God. Like, really, Rob Zombie? You can't just... And the guy that said this is completely right. You can't do it. He cannot do it. He cannot say to himself, I'm not going to show this. He has to show every single thing in brutal, gory detail, which takes all of the suspense and fear out of this movie. Every single last bit of suspense and horror is sucked out. Because he doesn't know how.
There's nothing in this film that's left to what happened.
Exactly right. And that's,
you're never watching it, right. And then 10 minutes later, Michael Myers is stalking somebody else, and you're like, well, what happened?
Right.
And then later on, maybe they show you the aftermath or something. He never leaves that.
Right. There's nothing to imagination with Rob Zombie. It's all like, look, 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 look.
Look what I can do.
Right. Violence, 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 violence. Isn't it scary? Look, violence. Isn't that scary? Doesn't that make you feel uncomfortable? Look, he seems to misinterpret discomfort as fear or suspense. You know, it's the same way that, like, Cannibal Holocaust, right? An effective movie for sure, for other reasons, but it's not necessarily a scary movie for the same reason, because it's so over the top, so gory. It's not a scary movie. It's an unsettling movie. That works for completely different reasons because it actually is a lot smarter. Rob Zombie has absolutely nothing to say in this movie. There's nothing. There is no subtext to this movie.
No.
This is like you what it is, what you get. But he just doesn't. He's a man who will never make a movie that's scary. Lord of Salem. I liked Lords of Salem. It's not scary. Devil's Rejects is incredibly uncomfortable, incredibly well done. A really great example of 70s exploitation done in modern time. It's not a scary movie. And House of a Thousand Corpses, I don't remember. I just remember that it was like a big music video. So for him to try to tackle a movie, a slasher movie that's supposed to be filled with things like suspense and tension and, you know, like good kills. He can do kills, but fucking anybody can do kills. That's the easy part. The hard part is making a movie that's suspenseful. Which then brings me to my next point. He doesn't introduce us to the actual remake of Halloween until an hour into the movie. Which is, that's when we meet Laurie. So he introduces us to the character we're supposed to care about, the character that we're supposed to have suspense for when she's in peril, an hour into the movie.
Which never gives you enough time to get to know her.
Never.
At all.
He took the original Halloween and condensed it down to an hour. That's what he did. And he actually condensed it down to less because he does the entire original movie in like 30 minutes. Because he fills the last 30 minutes with that shit in the house where he kidnaps her and brings her to a fucking attic.
Yeah.
Which is, I just don't.
Every time I see that, I always think of like,
Friday the
13th, the New Line Cinema one, where he like takes him down same thing.
Takes the girl down into the ground and keeps her.
And like chains her up.
And you know what really bothers me about this too? In the first movie, There's no... Now, I don't know. I believe that John Carpenter may have said that he always intend... I don't know this for 100%, so, you know, don't quote me on this. But that he always intended for Laurie to be his sister. But in the first movie, she's not his sister. I mean, there's... If you watch Halloween on its own, the first Halloween, Laurie is not Michael's sister. Laurie just happens to be there when Michael comes back. And he targets her.
Yeah, see the...
Rob Zombie took this movie and then looked at what happened after the first Halloween and used that for his story to make her his sister.
So Michael Myers just spent 17 years right. in a hospital. His sister was a baby. How does he know that's his sister?
I don't know.
Did someone tell him? Before Danny Trejo died, did he show him a picture?
Right, exactly right.
How the fuck does he know?
I know. And in the second Halloween, the original second Halloween, they don't really explain it either. They just kind of like, oh, that's his sister, and he just knows. That's what Rob Zombie does. He basically takes the logic of Halloween 2 and puts it into the first movie, and I don't understand why. Like, he didn't need to do that. I don't know why he did that. Laurie never needed to be his sister.
No.
And then by putting that into his story, he then created this whole last part of the movie where Michael is trying to keep her because it's his sister. It just makes it, I don't know, it takes away the randomness of it all. The random, like...
Yeah, you just have this random killer...
Right.
...going after somebody right. who he thinks... You know what? You don't even know if he thinks he's related to her.
Right.
She just happens...
No, in the first movie, you don't. In the first movie, there is absolutely...
She just happens to be at the house right. that he goes to.
Yes, you watch... Yeah, she goes up and leaves the thing at the door when he's inside.
Yep.
Because he goes back to... In the first movie, he goes back to his house. Yep. And he's inside the house when she goes up to the door. And then from that point forward, he's following her and watching her. All you know is that he saw her at that moment and then went after
Which
her.
Rob Zombie sort of does.
Yeah, but he sets it up
but
right
he sets it,
from
yeah,
the beginning that it's
yeah,
his sister.
Yeah, that's his sister.
He makes it a major plot point, which is weird.
And what the hell is she delivering to that house anyways?
I don't know. In the first movie, it's something with the real estate. I don't know.
Yeah, but nobody lives there.
I don't know.
They're Send it to the real estate agent.
I don't know.
God. Yeah, all right, so I just want to say, all
right.
So I watched this, you know, with my girlfriend,
yeah.
who had never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
She knows the original. I don't think she's ever actually sat down and watched it. She's not a horror fan,
yep.
but I've watched it numerous times, so, you know, she kind of sees it, you know, in and out why I'm watching it. She hated this so much.
Yeah.
She just basically everything worse, and she's not even a fan of the shit.
Yeah.
And everything we're saying... She could not stand. She hated the profanity. She hated the way it was set up.
Right.
She didn't like the Michael Myers character. Right. She's asking questions. And then she says something that I've thought every time I've watched it. She goes, why is there so many pumpkins in this thing? Did you ever notice that? There's a pumpkin in every fucking scene. We get it. It's Halloween. It takes place at Halloween. From the get-go, from right. the Myers house, there's a pumpkin on the TV. Right. Then there's like one in the van. Then there's one on every porch. Then there's one in every living. He spent half the budget in fucking pumpkins.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Also, one more thing I have to say before we finish up here. From my original screening at the theater, this movie drew an unintentional laugh. I don't know if you can guess what the scene was. Probably not, because, you know, there's a lot of scenes where that could possibly happen. But there is an unintentional laugh when Michael, for whatever reason, and we didn't even talk about this. Michael, the fact that the fucking white mask is there from the beginning. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when he takes off the clown mask and puts on the Michael Myers mask.
And it's way too big.
Yeah, and there's this little like kid, but he basically looks like one of the people in the little Dolly Dearest costumes walking down the hallway with the Michael giant fucking mask on with a knife. People in the audience laughed out loud. Like, this is a moment that's supposed to be really intense. People found it fucking hilarious.
Here's another thing that bothers me too. Michael Myers is supposed to be this uncontrollable killer. Okay. He doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't care. He's out to kill you.
Yeah.
Like that's what he wants to do. He wants to murder you.
Right.
Somehow between the time he murders his family and his mother comes home, he has time to go hide a mask and a knife in a floorboard.
Right.
So if what Rob Zombie says is true, that Michael Myers is supposed to be the psychopathic killer and doesn't know what he's doing, That admits guilt right there. He knew he did something wrong by hiding the evidence.
Yeah. Good point, yeah.
He hid the evidence from the cops, from whoever was going to find this, so he knew what he did was wrong. So obviously he's not a psychopath. Bullshit.
Right. Everything he does in this movie points to the fact that this is definitely he's a product of his environment. There's nothing that he does in this movie.
And wouldn't that mask be a lot more damaged? I mean, you just put it under like a wet floorboard.
Agreed. Yeah, mice and bugs and all kinds of shit would just eat away at it.
Yeah there's going to be mice. Like when he took that out, at least put some mice turds in it to fall out.
Yeah,
something.
I know something. Good point.
So you want to hear some of Rob Zombie's thoughts on this from his own mouth?
Yeah, sure.
Let's all right. So I actually pulled these. There is a great, great YouTube channel. It's called Horror Is Dead.
Yeah, he did a few of these on different movies.
Yeah, the one we're gonna
he had to shut
pull
down
some
comments on this. By the way, did you see that? Scroll down. He shut down comments because this movie is so decisive, and the fans of this movie are so passionate that they couldn't handle the fact that he did this. The fans of this, I will not go online and bash this movie because I know I'm doing it now, but like I cannot. I don't have the time or the energy to deal with the people who will come at me because they don't understand. They don't they take it as a personal attack. Well, you know, and they don't want to admit that this movie is deeply flawed.
This it's a short documentary that, right, and it's absolutely phenomenal. He does a bunch of other ones. He does, you know, New Line Cinema destroyed Friday the 13th. He does,
right, I saw that
one. He does a great job. I mean, the work he puts into this is awesome. Yeah, so sure. I just wanted to give him credit because that's where I'm pulling this from. All
right.
So we're going to skip around a little bit throughout this documentary. It does about 30 minutes long. I'm going to show you some short clips from Zombie's mouth himself. Let's see how Zombie sees this film.
I felt sometimes that the character of Dr. Loomis just popped in and out when they needed somebody to say something dramatic.
You know, Loomis in all the other Halloween movies seemed kind of crazy, like a crazy guy running around trying to get people to help him. And it wasn't too hard to believe why no one believed him, because he seemed a little bit like he was crazy and drunk and off his rocker.
There's even things about the original Michael Myers in Halloween that bothered me. Like, he found the only mechanic that wears a pristine mechanic's uniform to kill.
But when wanting to make it different, I was like, well, I don't want it just to be like he happened to rob a hardware store and steal that mask. What if they didn't have that mask? What if we steal like a Jimmy Carter mask, or you know, or an Elmo mask, if that was the only one available at the hardware store? And when did he rob the hardware store? In broad daylight, and the alarm's still ringing? Like, where is everybody? Those little things that always bother me in that movie. Thank God Loomis stopped to make that phone call exactly at that phone booth where he dropped the car off and found the Raven and Red matchbook. Those kind of coincidences always bothered me, so I'm trying to make things make a little more.
I haven't seen the station wagon around. Is Michael Myers driving the station wagon in this
Michael
one?
Myers does not know how to drive in this movie. Because that always bothered me. You know, they played it off like, someone must have gave him lessons. But, you know, no one gave him lessons. He's in maximum security prison, so he doesn't drive.
It bothered me.
Bothered me in that move. That always bothered me.
The funny thing is, just before this, in this documentary, he's actually reading some stuff that Rob Zombie had put up on websites during other interviews and stuff, where he clearly says...
He contradicts himself completely.
Oh, quite. Yeah. I actually have one from... Let me see if I can get it here. I think it's off of Bloody Disgusting. And in the Bloody Disgusting interview, this is what Rob Zombie says. My first reaction was to wonder what the point of remakes are. I thought the same when they remade Psycho. And now they're remaking Dawn of the Dead as well. I love the original so much that I just wonder, what's the point of doing a remake of these great movies? What doing a remake of these great movies is? What do you hope to improve on? That was from BloodyDisgusting.com in 2004.
Yep.
So he's contradicting himself right there, right, saying he doesn't want to do it. Why do a remake?
You know why he did it, right? I mean, at the end of the day, regardless of what he says, what he... Money, right? I mean, like...
It's all about money.
Right, absolutely.
All about money.
And, I mean, there's so many... Not to get on a Rob Zombie kick, but there's so much out there that shows that, like, this dude is just playing character. Like, his character... He's playing the character of Rob Zombie. right?
Yeah.
Like, we know, living in Connecticut, that he's an old man who yells at kids for being on his lawn. He is the, get off my lawn!
No, he moved out of Connecticut.
Right. That's what I mean. Because there were kids being too loud at a skate park. This is a man who puts on a persona.
And I don't want to bash Rob Zombie. I like Rob Zombie's music. I love his music.
Yeah. I like his,
a few of his movies. I mean, it's not that. It's just the fact that
he never should have made this movie. He should have never made it. He should have done.
And if he was planning on making this, then he shouldn't have gone through the effort beforehand to bash remakes, to say all this, how much he loved the movie, then to turn around and say, well, this bothered me. Right. This bothered me. This bothered me.
Right.
And then there's this.
I don't explain why he is the way he is, because what I found interesting is you can't really explain it. Because, you know, truly, if that character was a real character, a real person, he's just sort of born that way. So
but isn't that what he does?
That's not what he does at all.
That's what I'm saying, is that's exactly what he does. It gives us multiple reasons as to why he is the way he is. You can't help but blame his surroundings on his personality, because he put him in a situation where anybody would come out fucked up. You couldn't blame them for it. He immediately sets up sympathy for this kid. Immediately. Why didn't he have Michael Myers kill, like, a kid in class who was trying to be his friend? Right? Why didn't he have him have a stepfather who was trying to be a father? Like, if you wanted to set him up as this person who just does things because he has to, because he's born that way, surround him with people who want to be part of his life, who want to see him turn out okay, and he kills them anyway.
Yeah, because everybody he kills is people who are assholes
to him. The only people he doesn't kill, people who aren't. His mother and his baby sister.
Which they should have made him kill. If he's truly a psychopath, he would have killed his mother. He wouldn't have cared.
And he would have killed the baby.
And then he had the opportunity to kill Dr. Loomis in the hospital.
Right.
And his mother sitting at the same table, but instead he kills the nurse, who's an asshole to him.
Exactly.
You know, Dr.
Kills the two orderlies that come in. They're assholes to him. Kills them, leaves the girl alive.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Leaves her alive. The victim of the rape, he leaves alive.
But then he kills Danny Trejo, who was being nice to him.
But I said that was, and I admit, that is the one effective, like, emotionally attached kill he has in that movie. And Danny Trejo gets all the credit for that. All the credit for that, because he does such an amazing job as that sort of kind, orderly character. You can't help but like that guy.
All right, so let's see what he says here.
You know that done deal, no matter what.
Yeah, no matter what, I wouldn't do another one.
Next part I wanted to play, I think, here.
Would this be a franchise? Are you talking about doing another in a series?
I'm not talking about it. I mean, I want to do the one film with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then be done with it.
What about you? Would you do another one?
I have signed on for another one because I was under the belief that Rob was doing another one.
Oh! Well, how do you feel about that? I just learned that as well. How do you feel about Rob maybe not, definitely not doing a second one?
Well, you know, it changes a few things.
So does that mean that if this does well and received well, that there'd be a sequel?
Probably. Not with me. I mean, I'm done. I don't want to do anymore. I mean, I did everything I wanted to do in this movie, but, you know.
So you know that done deal, no matter what.
Yeah, no matter what, I wouldn't do another one.
So.
Yeah, I don't know why he would even come out and say that. Like, first of all, I can't blame him 100% for that, like doing the sequel when he said he wouldn't, because let's face it, the first movie makes a ton of money, did really, really well. No one is going to give him anything unless he does another one. Like, I think he did this with Dimension, maybe, I don't even know who it was, or Miramax, I don't know who it was he worked with.
It was the Weinsteins.
Yeah, the Weinsteins. The Weinsteins are not going to give him money to do anything else unless he agrees to do Halloween 2. So I can't fully blame him, because as a director, you can't. I know that they end up in these situations where they're like, I really want to do this thing, but no one will let me do it unless I do this thing. And it's the same thing that actors have. Like, they have to do gigs or movies for a paycheck so that they can do passion projects. Which, you know, he did Halloween 2, and then he would follow that up with Lords of Salem, which is very clearly a passion project. So in a way, you can kind of see it, but he never should have come out and said it. He should have been like, I really don't want to do another one. But you know, like,
so instead of making it sound like it's all about the money, because that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, right.
He's like, I don't give a shit what you think. I don't give a shit what the fans think. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Right.
And that makes it sound like it's all about the money. If it's not about the money, then just come out and say, I'm going to do this because I was promised.
Be honest about it.
Something in the future that I really want to do that I'm passionate about.
I have passion projects that I can't do unless I do this movie.
Yeah.
Plenty of other directors have come out and said that before. Yeah. Actors say it all of the time. I just listened to an interview with John Cusack, and he was like, you can tell which movies I do for the paycheck and which ones I do because I want to. I do the paycheck movies so that I can do the ones I want. No one really looks down on that because it's just part of the business. Just be honest about it. Don't tell us, no way, absolutely not, am I ever going to do this. Because when you do it, you're going to look like a fucking idiot. And then when you do it and that movie comes out as like this abortion of a sequel, you look even worse. You know what I mean? Because now it looks like, I don't even, that was, Halloween 2 is his movie through and through. He can't blame that on anybody else. That's his. So that's his movie on the screen. Everything he wanted is there. There's no doubt about it. Maybe that is a passion project because that thing is, everything on there is his. He has to own that thing. So.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure you get the feeling of how we feel about this.
Yeah, I hate it, so. I really do.
I fucking hate this movie so much.
But I'll watch it again someday because for some reason I just do that.
Yeah, you get depressed, you know, you grab a gallon of ice cream and just start shoving popcorn in your face and just put this movie on. And
something,
just...
I don't, it just makes me feel better, like, well, I could have made this movie. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, at least I didn't do that.
I could have done this.
Yeah, at least my name's not attached to this thing. I mean, that's always good. So,
A lot of people say, hey, if you're down on yourself, just go to Walmart.
Yeah.
When I'm down on myself, I just put this in.
Director's cut, Halloween 07.
Yeah. And at the end, I'm like, wow, I don't have it too bad.
Yeah, exactly. Be like,
it's actually pretty good.
Man, my IMDb profile doesn't have this on it.
Yeah. So... Well, those were our thoughts on Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for the show. We don't have a lineup for the next show, but I can say we have some Halloween stuff coming up since this is going to come out like end September sometime, maybe beginning of October. So expect some, you know, Halloween specials coming up very, very soon. And yeah, look forward to that. So hope you enjoyed this two-parter and... hopefully you're not one of the fans of Rob Zombie's Halloween that I referred to.